This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The United States has military forces all over the world, and in Iraq and Afghanistan, they are engaged in two wars. This nation hasn't had a draft since the Vietnam era, and the draft is unlikely to return. But even in peacetime, the military has a steady need for young, able-bodied people. To fill that need, they do what many businesses do. They recruit. One recruitment method is to visit high schools. Most people don't consider or don't give these recruiter visits a second thought. It's just the way it's done. The military is exposing young people to a career choice, helping them to find a way to serve their country, and offering many of them a way to a better future. But not everyone sees it that way. Some fear that because America is fighting wars on two fronts, the need for recruits has been elevated, along with pressures on recruiters to meet enlistment quotas. In light of that, some worry that recruiters aren't telling impressionable young people everything they need to know to make an educated decision. They worry that despite reports of casualties on the nightly news, young people may not make the connection between a military career and being put in harm's way. At least one group wants equal access to high schoolers to give them another point of view, or at least additional information to help them make a wise choice no matter what they choose. But in many cases, that access is blocked. So this hour, we're going to talk about how the military recruits at the high school level, and we'll hear from an organization trying to give young people another side of the story. We'll hear from them later in the program. First, we welcome Captain Amika Banks. She is the company commander of the Charlotte Recruiting Company. She's been there since July of 2007, and they are composed of 50 soldiers, 8 recruiting stations in Kannapolis, the University area, Gastonia, Huntersville, Monroe, Statesville, Salisbury, and the South Park area, and one on-campus recruiter at UNC Charlotte. Her primary responsibility is to plan, conduct, and supervise recruiting operations, which ultimately leads, I am told, to the enlistment of regular Army and Reserve soldiers. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having
me. Nice to have you with us. Also with us today is First Sergeant Charlene Gilmore. She is the Army's recruiting director for the Charlotte region. Tell me the difference between your two jobs here. Sergeant first. Well, Captain, you're the ranking officer. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I pretty much command the company and oversee all operations and pretty much provides that direction. Whereas First Sergeant Gilmore, I would compare her to the CEO, and she pretty much executes and manages the soldiers and take care of those day-to-day issues that may come up.
So, again, how many people do you have to deal with?
I have to deal with approximately 50 people.
And all of them are recruiters?
All of them are recruiters.
We'll talk about what recruiters do, how where recruiters come from within the ranks of the Army, and how you got to be recruiters as well, among other things. But first, how were you recruited? How did you both come to join the Army, Captain?
Well, this is pretty much a detailed assignment for me. I'm a finance officer initially, and this was a command opportunity. So when I was asked to take this venture, you know, I thought it was a great opportunity to command. So,
but how did you come to join the Army?
I joined the Army immediately after high school.
Okay.
I didn't feel like I was quite ready for college. So instead of just sitting around wasting time doing nothing, I thought it'd be an excellent opportunity to get some training and education as well.
Did they recruit you, or did you just simply say, I'm going to go into the Army?
I woke up one day and I flipped through the phone book and called the recruiter and said,
why the Army?
I think because you see more advertisement for the Army, and most people, that's what they see and identify all the services as the Army for whatever reason. It could be the Navy or the Marines, but the first thing they think of is the Army because you see the Army more.
Okay. Sergeant, what about you? What's your experience?
Yes, mine was service to country. My father is a 22-year veteran. I'm the baby of 4 girls. All of us enlisted right out
really?
Of high school. My sister, Crystal, she was the only one that went to college and became commissioned through ROTC program. But all of us, all the girls, we joined the Army because of my father.
Wow. How's your mom feel about that?
She was very supportive because all the travels that she had with my father, she was used to the lifestyle.
And you like that life. Obviously, you like that life. Doesn't bother you, the fact that you can move around a lot?
None at all.
Service. This is a career for you then?
Very much so.
For both of you?
Yes.
So now that you're hooked, now that you've made you feel you've made the right decision, you're a lifer.
That's right.
Okay. I know that we have Armed Forces recruitment offices for all the services all across the country in which people can come to you. How many different ways do people from the Armed Forces go out to meet people outside of the recruitment offices?
Local community events, colleges, high schools, internet.
Really?
Yes.
Internet. How do you push your message on the internet?
We have a website, goarmy.com, mm-hmm. and on there, an applicant or a prospect has the opportunity to put their information in. It says contact a recruiter. There's a link for that. Or it says fill out all of this information, which is basically like an application, and it will go to the recruiter that handles that zip code automatically through the internet.
And when you go out to locations, do you request to go there? Are you invited to go there? Do you have to ask permission to go to certain places, or do you just show up? Because I know that you go to schools, obviously, but that's what we're going to talk about today. Yeah, you've also been known to haunt shopping malls and places like that. So do you have to get permission, or do you just show up and do your thing?
Most of the time we have to get permission, but a lot of times we're asked to participate in activities as well. For example, on Memorial Weekend, we were asked to actually participate in this festival. We take an honor when people come and ask us to mm-hmm. participate, because we do have assets, for example, the rock wall, the H3, the football toss, different activities that will draw crowds and kids. So some of those events aren't necessarily to recruit, but just for community awareness mm-hmm. and to have that presence of the armed forces and the military to bring some sort of patriotism.
Go ahead.
Now, with the schools, oftentimes we have to pre-coordinate that. There are certain days that our soldiers are authorized to be on campus and on a consistent basis, so that's already pre-planned ahead of time.
What do you tell young people about life in the service? What do you say that pushes their buttons or that makes them make that decision to join you?
Well, we have a process that they learn in school, first of all. Our school is at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. It's 6 weeks and 4 days, and they're basically... This is for the recruiters. Mm-hmm. They're taught interpersonal skills, speech, leadership, and then they do what we call the Army interview. During the Army interview, they break down this acronym called SOLDIER. SOLDIER stands for Service to Country, Occupation, Leadership, Diversity, Income, Excitement, and Respect. And out of those, once the recruiter explains which one, you know, do you feel is most describes you, and then from there, if they say, for instance, I'm only interested in occupation, we'll go into talking about specific jobs and how we can tailor.
So let me get this straight. You go through that acronym with young people who are you're talking with,
yes.
and you find out which of those SOLDIER, seven things, they're most interested in, and then you focus the conversation in that area.
We focus that because what we want to do is we want to take their goals, dreams, and passions and kind of marry them up with a Army need where it suits them and help them get to where they're trying to go.
Just a broad stroke here. Today, as you talk to young people, what area do they seem to be overall most interested in? Which is the button that gets them?
Well, I tell you, with the economy right now, we talk about income and the Army being able to provide a guaranteed job and career.
And that's the one?
Yeah.
Because I know for a while in the good times before the economic fall, one of the problems that the armed forces faced, I think, service-wide in terms of recruitment was that jobs were plentiful. And so you didn't have to necessarily turn to the Army. Mm-hmm. Or the Air Force or the Marines or the Navy to get a better life. And now that it's hard to get a job, that's probably helping you a little bit.
Right. But I would say prior to the economic situation, excitement was one of those things that we would talk to young people about, being able to travel, being able to do those exciting things as far as going airborne and special forces and, 'cause, you know, with the reality shows, you have Survivor and stuff like
right.
that. So that could be exciting for a young person.
I'd just like to know how much like Survivor the Army is. Because I'm not signing up if it's like Survivor.
We had a lot of people interested in furthering their education, not uh-huh. having the money to finish college. those type opportunities through getting the Montgomery GI Bill and paying for college.
I would think that most of you didn't get into the Army to be a recruiter. You got into the Army for various reasons, but I'm sure at the back of the list, you probably never thought about being a recruiter, and I would think that many of the recruiters that you work with are the same. Because you're kind of a salesperson when you are a recruiter, right? I mean, you're selling the Army to kids and to young people.
Well, I don't want to look at it as being a salesperson. We would like to call it maybe a career counselor.
Okay.
Helping those young people make decisions about their lives and plan out their future and let them know that there are options, and especially if they don't have a plan.
Now, they are taught during the Army interview process, there's three options. Mm-hmm. There's full-time, part-time, and then your present choice of what you're doing. So we show them
show the recruits
okay. already what they're doing, how that will map out 5 years from now, as opposed to being full-time.
So in other words, if I'm coming to you and I'm talking to you, and I have a job in retail, maybe I'm a student and I have a job in retail, you then show me my career path in retail, what it probably will be like in 5 years?
Yes, sir.
Given my education, et cetera?
Yes, we have a program called ARCA that does all of that for
us. How do you know that's accurate?
That the ARCA program is accurate? Because of all the algorithms that are used in it. I mean, it's not an Army program. It's something that was made for us.
So essentially, if I have a job in retail and I'm a student, a part-time student, I have a part-time job, and I want to be something down the road, I tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put it into the computer, and the computer tells me in 5 years, here's what I'll be doing, and here's how much I'll be making, essentially?
That's how much you'll be making. If you didn't have a way to pay for college, that's how much debt you'll be in.
Does it always end up worse if you don't join the Army?
No, it does not.
Really?
No, it does
not. So some young people, you say, well, look at this, you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they still make the decision sometimes to go into the Army?
Sometimes, not all the time.
And if they join, is there really in this time, with wars on two fronts and extended tours of duty and what's it called, stop loss, can you really join part-time? Or are you liable to be called up full-time at any point in time?
You can join part-time, and all that depends on the unit. Not all reserve units are activated or called.
But they could be.
They could.
And if they are, is it likely, if you're in a reserve unit and you're called up, is it likely that you're going to be called up into Afghanistan or Iraq?
Not necessarily, because sometimes those reserve units, they backfill the active duty units at a particular installation. For example, if a unit from Fort Riley, Kansas was deploying, they could possibly use a local reserve unit to fill those active duty slots while that active duty unit is deployed.
You go into high schools. We're going to a break, but when we come back, I want to find out about this high school situation, because you go into high schools, and most of the time you're invited in, you're allowed in, you have permission to be there. I want to know if you're aware of any dissent about your being there. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in just a second. Charlotte Talks on WFA. Our program was made possible in part today by Business North Carolina Magazine, the April issue featuring a listing of the top golf scores in North Carolina. It's on newsstands now, or subscriptions are available online at businessnc.com. We live in a right-to-work state, which means you cannot be forced to join a union in order to work. And we're not alone in that designation. There are other right-to-work states around us. But North Carolina happens to be the least unionized state in the country. So we'll take a look at how that came to be. We'll hear from people on both sides of the organized labor question and find out about the latest piece of legislation on Capitol Hill aimed at making this and other states more union-friendly. That's tomorrow at 9.
A new study finds almost one in five American four-year-olds is obese. A look at the results of the study and its implications for long-term health. The Diane Rehm Show, Wednesday.
As always, you're invited to join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 FM WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about recruiting efforts on the part of the armed forces, and with particular focus on high schools as we go through the hour here. And we'll be hearing from another side of the coin a little bit later on. But first, we are in the studio here at Spirit Square with Captain Amika Banks, the company commander for the Charlotte Recruiting Company, and First Sergeant Charlene Gilmore, the Army Recruiting Director for the Charlotte region. You go into high schools, you're invited. In many cases, you request sometimes to be there, and most of the time I would think you're granted permission to be there. Are you ever denied?
Yes.
You are?
Mm-hmm. For example, with Providence High School, we could only go to that school twice a year.
Okay.
And one of my recruiters just told me last week they went by the school to drop off some information about NASCAR upcoming events. And they were threatened by the principal, and the principal told him that he was going to call the cops.
Well, now, as I understand it, he may not have much of a legal ground to stand on, if I understand this correctly, because No Child Left Behind and several other acts grant you permission to be on high school campuses?
That's correct.
It's the law.
Yes.
So that, but there is, you are aware of some dissent, of some people not wanting you there. And when you go to a high school, whether you're invited or whether you invite yourself and they say, sure, come on in, do you go and do an assembly or do you go and meet one-on-one with students? How does it work?
It varies. Sometimes, earlier you talked about, don't we sell the Army?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went from sales back in 2004 and became more of a counseling technique with the Army interview. So one of the things that we do when we go into a high school, initially we want to talk with the principal and the administrators to let them know what our goals are. We want to be mentors, sometimes substitute teachers, coaching, proctors for tests, and things of that nature. We come more from a counseling perspective. With the high schools.
And when you go and you talk one-on-one to kids, and as they begin to maybe lean your way, I'm sure that you can you point out that there are various skills that you can learn in the armed forces. There are various, if you have a particular interest, you can push people toward that interest. Can you pick a job or specialty when you enter the armed forces as a recruit? And does the Army always honor that choice?
No, sir. Unfortunately, you have to qualify for certain jobs. And depending on how well you do on the ASVAB test, the system will let you know whether this job would be suitable for you or not.
Do you take that test after you've enlisted?
No, sir.
You take it before?
Yes.
So I'm not going to go in thinking I'm going to be an electronics specialist and end up servicing Humvees or in the infantry, am I, or could I?
No, sir. It doesn't happen that way. What happens is during the Army interview process, when they start to talk about job selection, which is done in the recruiting stations, 80% of our enlistments are done in the recruiting station as far as job selection. So before he even goes to process at our military entrance processing station, he or her knows what job that they have.
But is it too late to back out at that point? If I know that I'm going to go in, I wanted to be an electronic specialist, and all of a sudden I'm going to go and I'm going to be a mechanic, and I have no desire to be a mechanic. Can I back out?
Yes, sir.
You can back out.
Yes, sir.
Do I know I can back out, or do I feel I've signed my name and my life away?
You know you can back out.
You're upfront about that.
Yes, sir.
I know that there has been a push, at least there was in the last administration, I'm sure it continues because we're still in Iraq and Afghanistan, to bring new people in. There's no draft, and without recruiting people, we can't sustain the kind of fighting force that we have all over the world. What is the pressure like on recruiters to meet quotas of new recruits? Get a little smile on your face, Captain, when I ask that question.
Well,
There must be some pressure, huh?
There is. And with most of the recruiters out here, they come from a background where they're used to excelling and exceeding the standards. And so sometimes when they come out here to recruiting and they don't meet those requirements, sometimes they feel a little defeated. So there is a tremendous pressure, especially for someone who's used to selling and doing great.
What? How does the pressure manifest itself? How many recruits does a single recruiter? How many people are they expected to bring in every month?
Two per month.
Two per month. And what if they don't?
If they don't, they get additional training. We try to look at their tools to see where they're what we call choke points, to determine what happened that month. Did they not talk to enough people? Did they not go to their high schools enough?
Has the quota risen substantially since 9/11? Or do you know? Because you haven't been in that position since 9/11. Has the quota risen?
No.
You don't know?
We don't know.
What's the penalty if you don't bring in two recruits a month?
It's not a penalty. It's just training and just reinforcement.
Because as we're going to hear in a few minutes, there are some who believe that recruiters, if they don't lie, they make promises that they can't necessarily keep or are guilty of sins of omission by not painting a totally accurate picture of what these recruits may be getting themselves into. Do you think there's a scintilla of truth in that?
I don't think so. I just think that maybe it wasn't clear up front as far as what the applicant or person understood, but I don't think the recruiters intentionally lie or conceal information. I just think that maybe there was a misunderstanding somewhere in the process.
James in Charlotte writes, something anyone should be concerned with in going in the Army is the selection of the MOS, your job. What's MOS?
Military
Occupational Specialty.
My recruiter pulled two huge volumes off a shelf and flipped them open. One open to engineer, train, and the other to surveyor, field artillery. I took the surveyor route and have been a surveyor of one type or another for 30 years now. Be careful what you select. I got lucky, he says. Please be sure to thank your guests for their service. So that turned out to be a good thing for him. I would think that one of the obstacles that you have faced in recent years is the daily litany, although it's let up a little bit in the last year or so, of casualties coming out of these wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Do these kids, are they affected by that? Or do they see this as one big video game? Do they understand what they're doing here in terms of serving their country and being patriotic is one thing. Another thing is having yourself blown up. Do they understand what they're getting into?
I think they understand. I think that since 9/11, I think it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, but I think the reality still exists and that they are aware that there's a possibility that they could go to war and they could die. So I don't think that, we've watered down that in any kind of way. I just think that because we've been at war for quite some time, that is not as shocking as it was a couple of years ago.
Among the U.S. Army key recruiting messages is the fact that the desire to enlist is near its lowest point in two decades and that there is decreased influencer support. Influencer support would be what?
Parental. From the parents and the your community.
So the parents aren't exactly pushing the kids toward this. Are they discouraging their children from getting in your experience?
In some cases they are, because I deal mostly with the soldiers. That's what they tell me, that, the kid wants the information, but when it gets to the parent, that's where they have go into a brick wall.
You're also facing, I'm told, the military is also facing a problem of obesity. In the general population, one in five, this is shocking actually, one in five people 12 to 19 are overweight. Is that why less than 30% of young people 17 to 24 fully qualify to serve, because they're too obese to serve?
I would say that's one of the reasons. But
so that makes your problems even worse.
Yes, yes. And I think they understand, the ones that really want to join, they work hard to try to lose that weight. And we've seen kids that lose a significant amount of weight just so that they can enlist.
So they're motivated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And once they get to boot camp, they'll be losing some weight.
Right.
I have read that due to dropping enlistments in times of war, the various branches of the military have lowered their standards, their traditional standards of who is eligible to be in the military, and are now taking people that they didn't take before. In some cases, people with criminal records. Is that true?
Yes, that is true.
Is that a deterrent then to young people who may want to serve? I mean, it's one thing to join the Army knowing that you may be put in harm's way and may be a casualty of enemy fire. It's another thing to join the Army and realize that you can't trust the guy in the next bunk because he's a criminal.
Well, some of the charges that we've seen were not necessarily felonies, but you may have a kid that received a DUI or a marijuana possession or possession of paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. And when I joined, it wasn't cool to do drugs. And I don't think that's the case anymore. So you see more young people, and they could be a good kid. It could be a really smart, decent child, but because they might have been in the wrong place, wrong time, hanging mm-hmm. with the wrong crowd, receive a charge.
So you change their influences mm-hmm. and straighten them out in many cases or most cases?
Most cases.
The Army used to use the slogan, be all that you can be, and then it switched to, I think, Army of One or One Man Army. Army of One, I think is what it was. Both those slogans reflect bettering yourself and being tough, seemingly very appealing to young men, it would seem. Does it work on young women, too? And what do you tell them today? What's your slogan right now?
The slogan is Army Strong.
Army Strong.
Yes.
And that appeals to young people how?
It gives them that confidence that it takes more than physical strength, but mental, emotional, and psychological strength as well. And I think that's important for young people today.
One team, one fight.
Mm-hmm. Does that work on, obviously, I mean, you joined not having been recruited. Do the recruitment slogans work on young women as well as they work on young men?
Yes. And I think that today I'm a more confident person. And I think for a young woman, that telling a young woman that she's strong and that she's equal to her male counterpart is important, and that she can come in the Army and be just as strong as the next man.
Is it easy being a woman in the Army? I've heard stories that sexual harassment and even rape in certain situations is more prevalent than we would want to know. Is it difficult being a woman in the Army, or the Air Force, or the Marines, or the Navy?
I don't think it's any different than the civilian sector. The thing with the military is that they offer equal opportunity, and that we talk about it and we promote it and it's encouraged. And I think that we have rules in place mm-hmm. To prevent sexual discrimination. And
they work?
Yes.
Because there have been a couple of stories on 60 Minutes where they didn't work so well.
I think with any job, it's one of those things where it's kind of hard to prove, and it may be found unsubstantiated, but we don't condone that kind of behavior.
Tony in Charlotte writes, military recruiters should be allowed in high schools. I was recruited by Army and Air Force recruiters and chose to enter the Air Force. The recruiters did not mislead me, and I was mature enough to make an informed decision. After serving the Air Force, I joined the NC Air National Guard and attended CPCC, UNCC, and Queens University of Charlotte. Thanks to the Air Force, I have an MBA and an excellent job with a large company. I served a total of 23 years in the military. I probably would not have attended college without the assistance of the Air Force. I never regret entering the Air Force. So there's a kudos to you. However, kind of not, because the because the Air Force is the most attractive service, isn't it, for young people? That's where they want to go. And the Army is the least attractive, as I understand it, correct? That's one of your problems.
Yes.
Why? Is the Air Force just sexy because you get to fly? Or you think you're going to get to fly? What's the story there?
Well, it's usually viewed as an, and I quote, an easier branch. And I asked, well, why do you think it's easier? And I guess because the training that they go to is 6 weeks. It's just known as the most attractive service. It has nothing to do with flying. They just think it's the easier route.
Is it?
I don't know. I've never been in the Air Force.
Well, in the Army, we joke about the Air Force being on first-name basis.
Yeah.
Instead of First Sergeant Gilmore calling me Captain Banks, she would call me Mika, and I would call her Charlene.
Really?
So I think that's more attractive.
Okay. Put your headphones on for a second. We'll squeeze a couple phone calls in here before we have to go to our break. And I think it's Trey in Charlotte. Welcome to the program, Trey.
Hi, Mike. And thank you, ladies, for your service. We certainly appreciate everything that the Army does for us and the challenging job that you have as recruiters. I, as long as quite a few other people in the area, serve as a volunteer representative of the admissions office of one of our service academies. In my case, it's with the Naval Academy. I'm a 1990 graduate, and I'm pleased to be continuing my service now as a volunteer working with the admissions office to help identify qualified and interested candidates to apply for admission to the Naval Academy. And I just wanted to bring up the challenge that we also face about being able to interact with the high schools and as well as with the candidates and their parents and family members about letting them know about the opportunities that the military services have to offer. And the challenge and the opportunity to better themselves and to lead to, better and promising careers that the service academies have to offer.
So you're saying it's difficult to get into the high schools?
But it's really not difficult for us to get into the high schools, because I think since we are representing a college and we're essentially volunteer adjuncts for the admissions office, it may not be as challenging for us as it might be for the enlisted recruiters to get in there, because there is, as you spoke earlier, sometimes a bit of a stigma or a concern by certain individuals that you're going in trying to recruit and deceive individuals, which certainly is not the case, I don't think, for either side. And for us, what we try to do whenever we either go in and speak to a group in a high school or speak with individuals or work with, most recently, I attended a Boy Scout Court of Honor where we were invited, all of the service academies were invited to come in and give very brief presentations and then hold essentially a mini college fair there at the event to talk to students and to talk to the young, to the Boy Scouts there and their parents. But any of these events that we go to, what we're trying to do is to help let these young men and women know of the opportunities that are available as a full scholarship for them to go to one of these academies.
Trey, I have to let you go because we're coming up to a break. I thank you for your call and for your participation and the information as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by University City Partners, informing listeners that University City businesses can harness the intellectual power of science faculty through the Charlotte Research Institute at UNC Charlotte. Details at universitycitypartners.org. And by Southeast Psych, providing therapy, assessment, and consultation for individuals of all ages, now located in Blakeney and South Park. Details on the web at southeastpsych.com. Vermont has become the fourth state to approve same-sex marriage. The decision comes 1 week after the Iowa Supreme Court cleared the way for gay marriage in that state. A look at gay marriage in America on the Diane Rehm Show coming up at 10 o'clock. Lara Schwartz, staff counsel for the Human Rights Campaign, Matthew Staver, founder of Liberty Counsel and dean of Liberty University School of Law, and several others on the panel today at 10 o'clock. We're going to come right back with more of our conversation about military recruiting, particularly in the schools, in just a moment.
Enjoy an evening of masterworks from the New Orleans Museum of Art with WFAE. We'll view paintings and sculptures by Picasso, Monet, and others at the Mint Museum of Art. It's a special after-hours viewing of the exhibit, along with a dessert reception, Wednesday evening, April 15th, from 6 to 9. Ticket information is available at mintmuseum.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about military recruiting, particularly with regard to military recruiting in the high schools, with two people from the Army here in the Army Recruiting Station. Captain Amika Banks is the company commander, and First Sergeant Charlene Gilmore is the Army Recruiting Director for the Charlotte region. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, There are those who are not necessarily opposed to the military's unfettered access to high school students, but who would like equal access of their own. They fear that military recruiters are not necessarily giving young, impressionable minds the full story, not giving them all of the facts that they need to make a good decision. And at least in one case here in the region, when a non-military group requested that a particular high school principal grant them an opportunity to present a different point of view to students, they were denied access. So joining us now to talk about what they see as truth in recruiting is Chuck Fager, director of Quaker House. That's a church-sponsored project whose position is that when Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers," he meant it. Chuck Fager joins us by phone from Fayetteville. Welcome to the program, Chuck.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Quakers are pacifists. You believe that war is unchristian and needs to be done away with, but that doesn't mean, or does it mean, that you're trying to stop recruiters from doing their job?
Well, first I have to clarify that we Quakers have a peace testimony, but not all Quakers are pacifists, and you might get a phone call from somebody pointing that out.
Okay.
There was a fellow named Richard Nixon who was a Quaker, and he was something less than a pacifist. So I got to be we want truth in advertising here.
Okay.
So, at Quaker House, we one of our principal activities is operating what we call the GI Rights Hotline. It's been working since 1994. Soldiers and their family members and also people who are talking to recruiters call this free hotline to get accurate information about rules and regulations and also recruiting data and experiences. And in those 14 years that we've been operating, we've talked to maybe close to 50,000 soldiers and family members. So we have a fair amount of experience with this. And if I had to sum up some of the feedback we've gotten over these many years, a great deal of what we've had conversations with has started from what could be boiled down into one saying, "My recruiter lied." We hear this in variations so often that it's gotten to be a problem. Now, what kind of misleading information are we talking about? What do people hear that isn't accurate? Well, there's a wide range of things, as a matter of fact. If somebody wants to see some examples of this, they could go to our website, which is quakerhouse.org, and we have a whole page of articles that are taken from mainstream news sources recounting confirmed incidents where recruiters, unfortunately, have done some pretty outrageous things to mislead recruits or potential recruits into joining the Army.
Well, do you think they're lying, or do you think that the young people sitting in front of them are just not hearing, they're not listening? Because I have an email in front of me from Laureen who said that that I had said earlier in the program that I wanted to know if young people make the connection between being patriotic and joining the armed forces and realizing that they may put themselves in harm's way as a result. And she says that she was chatting on Facebook with a 20-year-old who said he was thinking of joining the Army, and she was curious and asked him why, and she said the Army gives you good benefits and money for education, which is true.
That's right.
And she said, Laureen, the emailer, says, "I didn't think I could join the Army because I couldn't kill someone," and he seemed to make no connection between joining the Army and shooting at other human beings. He seemed confused, she says. I don't think that possibility had ever occurred to him. Now, I'm not sure that's the recruiter's fault or the Army's fault. That's somebody not clearly seeing the whole picture, and young people's brains are still in flux. Is that part of the problem, maybe, Chuck?
I think it is in many cases, but you know, I realize I need to say you got the recruiter still there in the service in the studio, it sounds like, and I just want to say good morning to them and indicate that I'm not, in any comments I make here, want to make any kind of attack on recruiters themselves, on their character, or their dedication, or their service to the country. I believe that they're caught up in a military system that produces bad behavior on the part of a great many recruiters over time due to the pressures that they're under. And these pressures can be not only severe and ongoing, I think they've alluded to that, but they have to work hard to beat those quotas. They can also be deadly. Last year, 4 recruiters in Texas committed suicide out of 1 unit, and as a result of that, I believe it was in February, all the Army recruiters had to have a day-long stand-down. I believe that your guest there could probably tell you about that, and I believe that the subject of that stand-down was to help them figure out how to manage the stress of the job.
Mm-hmm. Stand-down, by the way,
to do that.
Stand-down in the military is very rare, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's essentially a work stoppage so that you can reevaluate what's going on?
That's correct.
And that happened because when he talked about it a second ago, you both looked at each other and in a knowing way. So this did happen and you did participate in this. And what was the thrust of it?
It was more open discussion where people can talk freely and express their feelings and ways to cope with the different stressors throughout the day.
So the quotas and the need to bring new people in is a very stressful thing for recruiters.
Yes.
And stress can lead people to do things that they wouldn't normally do, can it not?
That's correct, they could.
In your experience, in your unit, which is the only thing that you can talk about, I'm sure, has that been a problem?
We haven't had any major issues, but it can affect the recruiter as well as their family members.
I mean, if there's no repercussion, if there's no penalty for not bringing in the 2 people a month that you're supposed to bring in, and the only thing that they do to you as a recruiter is retrain you, give you more training, give you more tools in your toolbox, why is that stressful? There's got to be more to it than that.
Well, as Captain Banks mentioned earlier, when you have a soldier that, let's say was infantry or combat arms for 10 years, then got selected for recruiting, and because of his interpersonal skills, he's not able to address everyone. He's a little bit nervous or has a slight, maybe a speech impediment, for example. It's hard for him to recruit, mm-hmm. and then he feels like he's a failure. So, you know, that's the stress. I've been successful for 10 years. I've never failed at anything in my life. Why can't I do this?
But can this stress lead people to do things that perhaps the command would not approve of?
Yes. Some soldiers, they may start drinking.
But I'm talking about in dealing with the recruits themselves.
Oh, no.
Not in our command.
All right. Before we go much further with this, Chuck Fager, by the way, you need to know, it comes from a military family, almost enrolled in the Air Force Academy. He won medals in Air Force ROTC at Colorado State. What changed your view of the military? You didn't go in, and you've ultimately became a writer, and what changed your mind?
Well, sir, I don't know how much you want to get into my story.
Thumbnail.
The program is really not so much about me. I left Air Force ROTC in my senior year of college because I found it kind of boring. We were between wars at the time, and my crystal ball wasn't working. It didn't tell me that Vietnam was right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in a military atmosphere, I found being in the military without a war a tedious prospect.
Okay.
I wound up instead going into the work for the Civil Rights Movement. I was a very junior member of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s staff. Just at the time, the Vietnam War was heating up, and when I began to look at that war from the angle of what I had learned from Dr. King, I wound up going a different way. However, I want to say that I did not repudiate the values that I had learned growing up. I was taught that the military was an honorable way to serve the country, and to serve our country was an honorable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that working in the Civil Rights Movement and working for peace were different ways to serve my country.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I didn't want people to think that you were some kind of radical wacko. You have experience on both sides of the coin here, and you just want to make sure that people get both sides of the picture.
I wouldn't mind being called a radical, but wacko, we'll leave that to somebody else.
All right.
And unfortunately, I have to say that the stresses of this job of recruiting are not new. The stand down that they had a couple of months ago was the second in the last few years. In 2005, the Army had another stand down. A day-long stand-down of all the recruiters all across the service, specifically because of confirmed reports, widespread abuses with regard to misleading potential recruits.
Okay, one of the things that you think young people should know is that military enlistments are potentially unlimited in length, but that the recruitment handbook talks about 2 and 4 year enlistments. So you're saying if I sign up for 2 years or 4 years, I could be in there forever?
Here's what it says. I'm looking at a copy of the military enlistment agreement that every recruit has to sign. On page one, you fill in blanks where it says I'm signing up for a specific number of years and a specific number of months, and that's what recruiters tend to focus on and recruits tend to focus on as well. But if you turn to page two, the language on page two says that in the event of war, my enlistment in the armed forces continues until 6 months after the war ends, unless my enlistment is ended sooner by the President of the United States, and that military regulations can change without notice to me. Such changes may affect my pay, status, allowances, benefits, and responsibility, regardless of the provisions of this enlistment or reenlistment document.
Now, in the material that you sent, you said that most often recruiters that on that second page kind of skim over that second page quickly and don't bring much of attention to it.
Yes.
So I want to talk to our two recruiters here who are shaking their heads. No, that's not true, you're saying.
Okay.
In your case.
Yes, the form that the gentleman is referring to is a DA Form 4, and that is signed at the MEP station. The recruiters that are in the recruiting station do not.
What is the MEP station?
Where you go to take your physical, your testing, and sign your contract.
Okay.
The recruiters on the ground in the recruiting stations do not sign contracts with the potential applicants. That's done at the MEP station. So a recruiter does not even touch that form.
Okay, but is it true? Would you agree that if I sign up for 2 years or 4 years, that potentially I could be made to serve longer?
No, everyone that enlists has an 8-year obligation. It's a statutory obligation.
Even though it says 2 years on the form? I'm signing up for 2 years?
Yes, and this is how it works. If you sign up for 4 years, mm-hmm. you do 4 years of active duty or reserve. The rest of the years is called inactive reserve or IRR.
But you can be called up. And if I sign up for 2 years, the same is true. I have an 8-year possibility.
Obligation, everyone.
And people know that going in, you say?
Yes, they do.
Sir, I'm afraid that that is not exactly the same as our information.
And
on this form that I'm looking at, it says that whatever that initial obligation is, that can be extended involuntarily until the end of the war and 6 months after that, and the war is defined by whoever's in charge of the government, not a military or a military recruiter. And we have had people who have written to us. In fact, a fellow called me a few years ago. He was in the IRR, the Individual Ready Reserve. He thought he was finished. He got a letter that was extended his obligation for 20 years, sir. 20 years. I saw the paperwork. And he asked us if they could do that. We looked into it. We looked into these regulations, and the answer was, yes, indeed, they could. Now, I'm not pointing to these recruiters who are in your studio, sir. These are not decisions that they would make.
Right.
But this is what the people are who sign up are getting themselves into.
Congress passed a law, and we talked about this earlier, to provide military recruiters, upon request, access to secondary school students and directory information on those students. Recruiters are entitled to receive the name, address, and telephone number of juniors and seniors in high school. Has that been helpful to your recruitment efforts?
Yes, it has, but we don't always get that list in a timely manner when we need it. But when we do get the list, it is very helpful.
Can people ask you to not call them again?
Yes.
And you honor that request?
Yes.
Can parents ask you not to call their children?
Yes.
And you honor that request?
Yes, sir.
Are you opposed to this law, Chuck Fager?
I just assume that it guaranteed access to those who want to give another perspective on military recruiting. I'm not interested in making targets or demonizing recruiters. I'm interested in people getting full and accurate information as they make decisions about.
So you want to be able to go into the schools just like the Army and the Air Force and the Navy and the Marines go in, and have you been denied access?
It's been very difficult to get access. You know that the North Carolina ACLU is in court in Wilk County because one of our fellow Quakers worked for 5 years trying to be able to come put a small table in the building while the recruiters were there to give a different perspective. And they wouldn't let her do it. I mean, I don't know what part of the First Amendment and freedom of discussion they don't understand in Wilkes County in the school system, but that's all we're asking for.
I have about 30 seconds left. When you get access, what do you tell students?
We tell students, our motto is, check every line before you sign. Know what you're getting into, and you're going to need to look further than what you may hear from recruiters to get complete and accurate information.
What would you tell young people about that? Would you want to sit next to Chuck Fager's group in a high school hallway, where, like a job fair? Would you object to that?
You're friendly.
I wouldn't object. I believe in the First Amendment, and if he wants to be there, I think that he should be allowed to be there and give his point of view. So I wouldn't oppose him being there.
I agree. I
appreciate that.
Well, we're not going to solve this today, but I want to thank all of you for being here and giving us both of your points of view. Chuck Fager is the director of Quaker House, and Captain Amika Banks and First Sergeant Charlene Gilmore are with the Army Recruiting Organization here in the Charlotte region with the United States Army. Again, thank you for your service, and thank you for your time. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
All three of you.